And good evening, everyone. Welcome back to St. Joe. Mitch Holt is with you, the voice of the Chiefs and the snapper, 15-year NFL veteran, Pro Bowl long snapper Kendall Gammon. Session 8 here in St. Joe, session 5 with all 90 players, and another session in pads. A lot of rain here. I thought they might go inside. Outside today. It was a little more of a humid day, but Andy Reid wanted to be out there in the mud again.
You know, it's interesting. You and I talk about it a lot in terms of the fact of normally when you come up here and it's going to be hot, and I like that as a coach because you see how the distractions affect players and if they can play through it. Well, these are kind of distractions weather-wise. They're just different. It's not hot. It's been a little bit rainy. It's wet. You have to deal with the footing a little bit. The ball gets wet. So different things, but again, as a coach and as a coaching staff, you get a chance to see how the guys concentrate when things like that are affecting them.
We're talking a lot about offense in this show, and you were watching today the offensive and defensive linemen, specifically the one-on-ones. What'd you see?
You know what? I saw a lot of offensive linemen really working their pass sets, and that's something that you have to do over and over again, specifically to number 72 on the right side now instead of the left, really having to work that because there's a lot of little nuances on your pass set that you have to get there. So I watched him improve. But in general, I thought it was an up-tempo practice. I like some of the vets and how they're dealing with things. I see Tom Bahali. I see Brandon Albert working. And one will beat the other, and then you'll give a fist pump. I mean, they're working each other hard, but they've got respect because they know, you know, it's a sword sharpening a sword, and it's just making each other better. And that's what you want in a training camp. You want your veterans working hard. You don't want any brother-in-law going on because you've got one common goal, and it doesn't get done if you kind of take it easy in those drills.
And 72 is Eric Fisher, by the way, and take a good look at him. We're going to hear from Andy Reid in just a minute, but I want to get your thoughts. They did something interesting today, and it was a two-minute drill, but it was very specific. It was end of game. You got to get down the field. Don't need a field goal. You need a touchdown, which is the hardest thing to do, I think, in the National Football League. But in watching that two-minute situation on both sides of the ball, what was your impression?
You know what? This time, well, first of all, I thought the defense had more success in that than the offense did. And in this time of camp, normally you will see the defense ahead a little bit, especially if they start to bring a few wrinkles. And the fact is, with Bob Sutton and the defense that they've talked about, that attacking defense, you're going to bring different looks. And normally that's going to cause offense a little bit of problems here and there. So I think we saw that today a little bit. I think you saw a sack on Alex a little bit. It goes down a little bit, gets right back up. He was fine. You know, a pick by Demps, really just a great athletic move when the twos had moved down there and Chase had moved down there, a pretty good job. That was the closest that the offense got, I think. But in general, it's those type of game situations that I think is so important. And you and I both know, you've been around the league a long time as well, as the two-minute situations before half and at the end of the game, that really makes games.
And it's, I mean,
it's huge.
You can game plan. Those are, I mean, you've been in a two-minute huddle. It's magic for those who are able to do it. I mean, we've seen the Bradys and the Mannings do it and Breezes with regularity, but you really can't go off the script. I mean, you go off, but those repping those today, how important is that? Because it's really not sitting there and you got time to call a play. I mean, it's a hurry-up stress situation.
It is, and if you see and you watch Alex and Chase as well, the QBs, I mean, they're looking out to the right and their left. They're giving hand signals, a lot of nonverbal communication. You've got noise going on, so things like that. You just want to get used to that. You can't truly, Mitch, simulate it, but you've got to do the best you can because when you get into game time, the crowd's going nuts one way or the other, and that's just something that you try to get used to and rep as much as you can. But, again, like we said, so very important.
Well, we had a chance to catch up with Andy Reid after practice today, and one of the things Andy will discuss here, hey, he could have gone a lot of places. This was the most sought-after guy with 8 teams that needed head coaches on December the 31st. Andy Reid decided to come to Kansas City. What about today at practice and inheriting a 2-14 team?
It was good work today. So the guys came out, they busted their tail, got a lot of reps in the last 3 days. I mean, it's been tremendous work. We worked a 2-minute drill today, and which is good work, and we did that live. But listen, all in all, I appreciate the effort by the guys. We're working. They're getting better. They're challenging each other. One play, it's the defense. Next play, it's the offense. And as long as it's going back and forth like that, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I've been happy with their effort. These guys don't complain. They come out here. They bust their tail. That same attitude that I saw that I mentioned to you during the offseason, I'm seeing now. And they want to get better. And so from a coaching standpoint, you can work with that. That's There's been no issue there.
Andy, you say a lot that you're really happy with their effort and their work. When you take over a 2-14 team, are you surprised by that?
Yeah, that's the part you don't. Yeah, you don't know that. That's the unknown. And so, I mean, when I mentioned to you about the offseason, I mean, you just don't know. And then I didn't know coming into this, are they going to carry that same work ethic that they had, that they displayed during the offseason? Well, they've done it. They've done that. And they came back in great shape. And then they are challenging each other every play. You're seeing that, right? You're seeing the effort and the intensity and finishing plays. You got Depot, just big fella. And he's chasing the ball all the way down the field 50 yards. That's impressive stuff now. I mean, and the linemen are right there. Albert, who's a seasoned vet, man, he's down the field trying to find somebody to block. That's impressive stuff.
What's interesting here, Kendall, is I'm picking up from Andy that he saw this as an opportunity, not taking over a 2-14 team where you have to build bricks. I mean, there's a lot of building to do here. But what about him seeing this as an opportunity?
You know what, you're right. There is a lot of weapons here, and I think that's what he saw was there were a lot of weapons, and the team wasn't successful as you would have thought it would. Of course, a lot of people picking the Chiefs last year to challenge for the division. That doesn't happen, obviously. I think that fact, and let's not discount the fact that the Kansas City Chiefs are steeped in tradition and the Hunt family and how they are. They're one of the truly great organizations. I was fortunate enough to play for the Steelers and the Rooneys, and I feel like here with the Hunts and the Chiefs, it's something special, and he knows that. He's talked about it. So I think he saw that as an opportunity as well. The fan base here is rabid. It's as good as you can get. And so I think those things really spoke to him and what he wanted to do. And at the end of the day, I don't think it was a tough decision for him.
Well, one piece of the puzzle they had to go get was making the trade to San Francisco for Alex Smith. Alex today, after practice, talked about being with Andy Reid again and just what's going on with his team after a week here in St. Joe.
When you came here to Kansas City, that Andy Reid was one of those coaches you always admired from afar.
Yeah.
And he said the same thing about you. Now that you guys are here working together, how's it been? Has it been what you thought? And how has that process been as far as implementing what you want to implement?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have any preconceived notions or any ideas or anything. You know, I think the thing that – I've said this before. I think the thing that's just jumped out at me is not just Coach Reid, but the entire staff, just the passion for the game, the passion for coaching and teaching. You know, and it starts with him for sure. He's really setting that tempo. And it's, you know, we it's still early. You know, this is early, and we're still figuring it out and putting it together. And you've got to keep stacking days together. And, you know, that's it. You know, so, but, yeah, it's didn't have any preconceived ideas as far as when I came here. But like I said, it just the thing that's jumped out the most is just passion for the game, passion for coaching and teaching, being out here on the field in the classroom.
You and I have talked about how impressive the staff is.
Yes.
I want to ask you this. Andy sees this as an opportunity. But now all of a sudden, it seems to me, and I'm curious your thoughts, there's guys here that they wanted to come to where Andy was. Have you sensed that?
There's no question about it. And, you know, again, kudos back to Chairman Clark Hunt getting ahead of the curve, getting Andy hired, giving him a chance to go out and pick the coaches he wanted. We talked about it all off season as an assistant coach. If Andy Reid gives you a call to come to the staff, you're taking that call and you're considering that. I mean, I look at it, we talked about last year, a 2-14 team, yet what I think is one of the best corners in the league, Sean Smith comes here. Why? Well, you've got Al Harris here. They're smart enough to keep Emmett Thomas. I mean, things like that are so important, and that is what helps, I think, change the tide of what's going on. I mean, it's exciting. I have people stop me each and every day when I'm around and ask about the team and how everything's going, and they don't talk about last year. They talk about everything that's going on in this offseason and how the change is going. And I love that because that's exactly what you want when you're changing the culture.
Let's talk about Alex Smith here just a little bit. And what are you seeing now that he's been on the field? We've watched him now for a week. He was here with when the rookies were here. He's been here longer than anybody here in St. Joe. What are you seeing from him?
You know what? This is a guy who is completely dialed in, Mitch. I watch him and some of the nonverbal signals he's given and everything, and just the look in his eye. This is a guy who's completely in control, I think, knows what's going on. Coach Reid believes in him to make the right decision at the right time quickly, and that's something that's so important in this offense. You've been around him as well. I mean, this is a guy who's got a very outgoing demeanor, and he's just he's a natural born leader, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you.
Yeah, and I like the fact that he's been spotting his balls. We've talked about that a lot. I mean, on your slants, it's down and to the inside, to where if the receiver doesn't catch it, then nobody catches it. Doesn't get batted up and get returned for a pick six. If it's deep, he gets a little top on the ball and he hits the guy and gets it over the linebackers, but underneath the D-backs. He's just doing a good job of a pitcher, hitting people in stride so they can run and make big plays. And I think a lot of times this year, you know, a 50-yard pass may be a 15-yard pass crossing route or a slant where he hits a guy in stride and he just goes. That's huge.
Well, and he's only thrown one interception so far in camp, and that was on Junior Hemingway. Should have caught it. It bounced. He just flipped it up to the defender. But what has surprised me, and I'm curious your thought here, is his mobility and his ability to be explosive in his movement, taking off and running. His great comeback against New Orleans in 2011 and that comeback victory in the playoffs for San Francisco, I believe he had a long run in that one. But boots, rollouts, sprints, what about his ability to move forward and side to side? What's that mean?
Well, it's huge, because as an offensive lineman, when you have some confidence in your quarterback that can move a little bit and you know you don't have to be perfect, that every once in a while he can bail you out, that's a good thing. But I think you're going to see a lot of movement with him, because that now keeps the defense on their heels a little bit. It's a lot easier, I think, as a defensive lineman, if you know that QB's just going back seven steps, he's going to step up and he's going to be right there and you've got the target. But when he's jetting out to the right or the left and he's doing all kinds of different things and you've got the option in there as well, not that he's going to run all the time, but the fact that it's there possibly. And then the fact you talked about it is what happens if they're in some type of man and now he sees the middle of the field wide open. If he sees 15 yards, he's got the feet to go get it, and that's huge. That breaks down a defense. That breaks their wheels sometimes.
And honestly, the Chiefs haven't had a quarterback like that since maybe Thigpen was doing it. Because the other guys, if you go back, even back to Joe Montana and before that, DeBerg, and that was not their thing. I mean,
right.
They couldn't take off and run for 20 yards. But it has been interesting to see him, and the fact that his mobility gives an element of explosiveness. The other thing, Kendall, is his ability to extend plays. I've been able to see plays break down, and yet his athleticism will extend the play, and instead of a sack, or it being a negative play, he'll end up making something positive. What about the ability to extend a play?
Well, you're exactly right about that, in terms of if things collapse a little bit, able to shuffle to his right or his left, and by just that extra half second or that extra second, things like that are huge. And things like that get worked on every day in practice. You, in your drills, you know, they'll go back and they'll set up, and then the QB coach will be moving them one way or the other, and they get used to being able to move with that hand, two hands on the ball, so they've got ball security. Things like that, it's the little things that you do day in, day out that then translate into the game time situation.
Fans are excited about Jamaal Charles. He has been a warrior for this team since 2008, and will always remember his 2012 season, a 2-14 team, the year that he had. What have you seen from Jamaal so far?
You know what? He's still fast. I'll tell you that for sure. We know he's back last year from the knee injury and what he did, but I think it's even more. It's a guy who understands his role and I think is embracing the fact that it's going to be a different role also, in terms of going to be catching the ball out of the backfield a lot. And I think with Jamaal this year, Mitch, it's not going to be so much carries as it is touches. How many touches does he get a game? Because there's going to be a lot of swing passes. I think you're going to see a lot of little post routes to where he goes right off the tight end to the right or the left and pushes a backer to the outside and then cuts right in. And Alex has the ability to hit him in stride. And that's the one thing you want to do with Jamaal Charles. If you get him in space with people, that's not a fair fight. I say it every year. I say it all the time. Growing up playing not it, he was never it.
Well, Andy Reid has had a great experience with running backs. If you look at what he did with the Philadelphia Eagles, going all the way back to Ricky Waters, who was there, but then Westbrook and others. But now he's got an Olympic sprinter in that role. I wonder how much Andy salivates with the plays that he has and can design. And then a backup question to that would be the pressure on defenses now. If they're trying to get the ball to Jamaal in space on the perimeter, what does that do to the rest of the defense? Because that's different than trying to jam him up between the tackles.
Well, it starts to spread the field out, and you've got to cover more of the field, I think, with that. And he's mismatched, I think, no matter what, because I think, quite honestly, you'll see him split out several different times, not in a true wide receiver role, but to do some things to get those mismatches. But again, when you start spreading the field out, now you start to bring some other weapons around. Number 87, Kelsey, I think he's going to be a big weapon. We'll talk about him here in a little bit. But to go back to your question earlier in terms of what is Andy thinking with a world-class sprinter, I think he's picking the pencil up and he just starts chuckling and he starts drawing things up because this is a weapon that not many people in the NFL have.
This is a classic shot here. A corner, Sean Smith's going all the way. All of a sudden now I got to cover in space against this guy. And even though Sean Smith's used to covering receivers, he's not used to covering an Olympic sprinter necessarily. Now, we had a chance to get the reaction of both Andy Reid and quarterback Alex Smith on Jamaal Charles and what he means to this team.
You know, with the pads coming on in the run game, got to see him. You know, I've seen all the highlights in the run game. I think the thing that's jumped out at me the most is his ability in the pass game as well. A really versatile player. I mean, he's a matchup. Mismatch with the ball in his hands all over the field. I don't think there's really any situation on football you couldn't really have him in. I think he's that versatile, which is a credit to him, which is nice. It really, I think, you know, that helps us expand our playbook, you know, because he can do so much. You know, and he can really become a weapon for us in a lot of different situations, not just running the ball.
Yeah, Jamal's a big part of it, right? He's capable of doing the same things that Westbrook did. That McCoy did as far as the pass game. He's a legitimate threat with his speed, his route running ability, and his hands. So he catches the ball very easy.
Loved Westbrook when he played. And I love LeSean McCoy. But I'm thinking if we line him up on a track and we have a 60-meter race or 100-meter race, what do you think?
Not a fair fight.
That's why Andy Reid, I think, is excited.
He won't be it.
Yeah, well, and into this offense. Now, tons of your following us, and we love it. Ken and I love to bounce back to you. And we've got some from Scottsdale, Arizona. The question came in about Dontari Poe and how has he looked in pads. You were watching those guys really closely today. I mean, you were within 5 yards of those guys. What'd you see?
Yeah, I did focus on them all day, Mitch. And Dontari Poe, I played this game for 15 years, and I've never been around a bigger human being who moves more fluidly than he does. At 340 pounds, you know, 6'2", 6'3", it sounds like it weird when I say it, but he runs a little bit like a gazelle. I mean, it is very, very smooth. It's not fair. And what I'm seeing from him is he's being told to get up the field in specific spots. He's being told to attack. And I truly believe, even in the NFL, that there's very few people they can stop that man from getting to where he wants to go if that's truly where he wants to get. And I'm seeing it. And not only am I seeing the lower body hip roll and getting into it, but I'm seeing the hands. So you get the hands out there and you start to knock those big hands of the offensive lineman down. Now all of a sudden they're a little bit top heavy and they move and he's getting to things. It's good. And when he pursues, this is a guy, Mitch, what impresses me too is his attitude and how hard he works at it each and every day. And his pursuit angles, I like that. So, you know, say he goes to the right and the ball goes to the left. Now he takes that angle to where the ball's going. If the ball cuts back and he hits him, that's where you create your turnovers. Or if a turnover is created, he's coming and maybe he can recover that. So I think it's things like that. And, again, that speaks to Coach Sutton, what he's doing and starting to turn the tide in terms of knowing that the Chiefs have to create turnovers. And people like Dontari Poe can help with that.
Yeah, listen, one of the most fascinating things to watch in camp are OL against DL because it really is wrestling. It's like move, counter move. It's like a little MMA cage match. And to work at your craft, what I'm seeing from Dontari is he's working at his craft. He's not just relying on his athletic ability, that he's trying to get those special moves down. Now, speaking of moves, let's stay here with the OL DL because we had a question come in about Jeff Allen. He's been injured, had a shoulder problem, back in pads, on the field. What'd you see?
I was pleasantly surprised because normally you come back from any injury, you're a little bit timid, but I didn't see that in him today. I thought he did a good job. He stepped back in at left guard. Pass protection, I thought he was sitting on the bull rush very, very well. I thought he was getting his hands out and getting separation good, which I think it was a shoulder issue he had, so it was good to see that. I didn't see any real ill effects from the injury, so it looked like normal to me, and for the Chiefs' offensive line, that's good news.
Here we got one from D.C., from Mike from D.C., and yes, we are trying to infiltrate D.C. and claim that and annex it for the Chiefs' kingdom, especially when they go play the Redskins this year. Mike's got a good question, though. How many running backs make the 53?
Well, of course, you know Jamal. I think you're probably going to have two backups there. And fullback-wise, I think there's one and maybe two. It's really weird. This is where the numbers game, you talked about it before I came back, this is where the numbers game comes into it, because do you keep two fullbacks? Do you keep one and keep extra tight ends? Can one of those tight ends kind of be an H-back and fill in if need be? But to me, I think you're going to see four running backs for sure, possibly five. And if it's five, then I think that has a lot to do with that fifth guy really contributing on the special teams side of the ball and being a four core.
Yeah, if it's me, I see two fullbacks, three halfbacks, or three running backs, and three tight ends on this team, and then you go from there. And today, Cyrus Gray was injured, had to leave the field. You saw Nile Davis. You walked up the hill with him. But listen, this is a very tight end-centric, running back-centric offense. It'll be exciting to see how it evolves. Okay, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about one of the heated battles in this camp, and that is for the third quarterback position. We give you some pretty good perspective from the young and from the greatest quarterback ever to play in this franchise. Stay tuned. We'll have even a chat with Len Dawson when we come back on this edition of Chiefs Live.
This is a dorm room, but it's not an ordinary dorm room. Here, the lights are on at sunrise, and they're off at dark, because at this school, the last thing you want to do is fail. This is Chiefs training camp at Missouri Western State University. Classes are now in session.
We talked a lot before the break about Alex Smith. Now let's talk about the rest of the quarterback core. And before we get into this third quarterback race, I want to ask you about Chase Daniel, the vice president right now.
Yes.
What have you seen from him on and off the field?
You know what? I like his demeanor and how he's handling things. And this is a guy who has been a third-string QB before, undrafted. Was a second-string, of course, in New Orleans behind
Drew Brees.
Drew Brees, thank you. And so he's seen it all. I think he's good because I see him working with Alex and helping him out a little bit, because your second QB always needs to be some eyes and help out with some things and seen it. But he's been in the position of Bray and Stanzi as well. So he's seen it all, and I think that's good. He's a true pro in terms of how he goes about his business. I think he throws a good ball. The height to me doesn't affect him at all. I think he handles everything very, very well. Throws a very quick ball. It's really deceiving. But I like what he brings to the team, and I don't think the second QB position has been in better hands for quite some time.
Very interesting. And you say that his influence actually goes, because everybody talks about him helping Alex.
Right.
But you're saying he has the ability to help in this third quarterback race because he's been there, done that.
Well, I think so. And if I'm Bray or if I'm Stanzi, I'm talking to him as much as possible, because he understands things. He's been around and he's been in their position, because let's face it, they are in a battle for that third string QB, and it's going to be a great battle. So, yeah, I think it does go both ways, and I think that's good. And he's the type of guy, you can see football's on his mind 24/7 also, and which is good, because it's certainly on Alex Smith's mind 24/7. And so they've got a good bond. We've seen them together at some of the charity events that you and I were at. And, you know, they're at dinner and they're talking about the reps they had that day and what's going on. I mean, that's beautiful stuff if you're a Chiefs fan. So that, along with the fact that he can help mentor the young guys as well, that's a good thing.
Goes back to your iron sharpening iron comment.
Exactly.
Okay, let's get into this third quarterback battle now. Let's start with Ricky Stanzi. Being in St. Joe, we're not far from the Iowa border. That means Hawkeye fans come in droves to St. Joe. And yes, there is Stanzi Nation, and they are watching Ricky Stanzi, the beloved Ricky Stanzi, 26-9 as the Iowa Hawkeye quarterback. Not played in a regular season game. This is his third year now here in Kansas City. Where does Ricky Stanzi stack up in this race?
You know, it's tough. I mean, let's be honest with it. I mean, you've got a guy in Bray who a lot of people had getting drafted, and then he comes in as a free agent. Ricky's not had the best preseasons the last several years, but he hasn't got a huge chance. So this is a very, very important camp for him, and he knows that. I like how he's handling things, though. He's just going about his business, working hard, and really that's all you can do as a player. You know, being in 15 years, 15 camps where – you know, probably 10 of those people were trying to get me out of there. You've just got to let things go and do what you do and see where the chips fall.
He's been a good soldier, and he's fighting and trying to learn, and he's been supportive of the other guys. I'm on Des Moines radio every day at 11:30 in the morning. They keep asking me every day about it, and I also told the Des Moines Register, every rep Stansy gets in this camp, every rep, no matter how he gets, 2, 0, 10, and every rep he gets during these preseason games, Kendall, it seems like the Super Bowl.
I think that's a fair statement.
Well, and Ricky's been a good soldier, and he talked about being in camp now with a whole nother coaching staff, a whole nother offensive coordinator, and a whole nother scheme.
Have you been able to digest the new offense in the time that you've had since Andy's taken over?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, it's been fun to learn from him. You know, he has a lot of knowledge on the game, and so has the coaching staff. So to be able to sit in there in the meetings and just learn from him, you know, learn from our quarterback coach, from our O coordinator. You know, it's a little bit different of an offense from what I've been used to, but kind of understanding where they're coming from big picture and having the mini camp is huge. And then coming in here early has been nice, again, to kind of refresh it.
All four of these quarterbacks have an offensive coordinator. They've got Matt Nagy helping them as quarterback's coach, but their offensive coordinator was a quarterback, Doug Peterson. Your reaction to Doug and what he's been able to do?
You know what? I like Doug and the fact that he played the game for a long time. You know, he started a little bit, but basically he was a backup. So certainly he knows what these guys are going through. He has a great wealth of knowledge, and the fact that he's backed up some really big QBs in Marino, in Favre, in
McNabb,
exactly. Yeah. So I like that. You know what? I think he's huge because we know that Coach Reed is going to be calling the plays, but he brings so much to the table because he played for so long, and that's just big in a player's eyes sometimes. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't be a great coach if you didn't play the game at this level, but certainly it helps when you know your coach has been there and done that, and you, quite honestly, these guys probably saw him play a little bit, so it's interesting. I think it's a great situation to have somebody like that.
With this third quarterback battle, you said something that really struck, kind of resonated with me about Chase Daniel having influence both ways, with Alex Smith and then with those other guys. How about Doug Peterson here? Does he have that same thing? I mean, you mentioned he started, but he was his influence that can go both ways and understanding all four of these guys and where they're at.
You're exactly right, and that's what I was alluding to a little bit. Is it is much like Chase Daniel, but now it's the coach that can talk up or talk down, and he's just got that experience level, and I mean, I'll just be repeating myself, but it's a good situation because he's been around the game so long, and he's done it on so many different levels.
Well, we had a chance to talk with Doug. Now, this is a very interesting conversation because he gets right into this quarterback situation. What does he think of all four guys and the third quarterback battle?
You've been a quarterback in this league as a starter and a backup. How does that experience give you an advantage when working with these signal callers?
Well, you know, the fact that I have been out there playing and then, of course, being behind guys like Dan Marino, Brett Favre, and you know, Donovan McNabb in Philadelphia, and, you know, just gives you a wealth of that experience from just understanding what it takes to play that position and then being able to use those experiences to teach the quarterbacks we have. And you know, it just goes, I think if you've played the position, whatever position it is, I think it's definitely a benefit when you're in a coordinator spot or at least coaching that quarterback position.
And what is your definition of a good starting quarterback and a good backup quarterback?
Well, the starter has to be aggressive, has to be the leader on the football field, the commander of the ship. He's got to take things, he's got to take charge out there. That's what you got to have. And you can't have somebody that's going to sit back and be passive and be conservative. He's got to be aggressive. And then your backup has got to come in and manage the ship. He's got to be the guy that when things are kind of rough, if your starter's out due to an injury, he has to come in and just keep things going and manage the game and continue to put points on the scoreboard, and I think we got two of the best right now here in Kansas City.
And overall, what do you think of these four guys? What do you think they'll bring to the table?
You know, these four guys we have are great in the classroom. It's unbelievable. They challenge each other mentally, you know, on the film study each day, and even out here on the practice field. They love the competition, and it's just going to make that whole group better. And it's an exciting group to be around. I'm thrilled that Alex and Chase and Ricky and Tyler are all here, and look forward to these games coming up too.
Speaking of Ricky and Tyler and the competition, it seems to be like there's a competition for the third quarterback. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there is a little competition there, and I think it's obviously still wide open. Tyler's a young kid coming in, learning the system. Ricky's done a nice job. He's a very smart guy, very athletic guy, and each one is getting they're limited reps. Everything's really going to Alex and Chase right now, but every time they get an opportunity, it's a big opportunity for them. And we evaluate each play, and it's going to come down to the end between those two, I think. And competition's good, and it's especially at the quarterback position.
That was our Rachel Sanchi of 65 TPT asking those questions. You'll see her on the sideline of the preseason games, and also you can follow her on Twitter at @KCChiefs_Rachel. Rachel's also going to talk with Tyler Bray here in a second, but interested in those comments from Doug Peterson and the third quarterback race and just how he is approaching it and saying, hey, it's even. He's going to get everybody a chance, and he says it's going to go down to the wire. What do you think?
You know what? That's how it should go, too, because you want to see these guys in the situations. And we all know the fourth preseason game, you normally don't play the starter very much, so they're going to have a ton of time there. But I think it will be important for both those guys to get reps with maybe not the starters, but some solid front line so you can get a good idea. But the fact is, you got to watch them through camp, see how they perform on game day. Because the fact is, I've been around some guys who do well in camp, and then it comes game day, and it folds up a little bit. So you've got to see what people are made of.
It's something you and I will talk about a lot with Len Dawson during the Chiefs Radio Network broadcast, because don't go to sleep on these preseason games. They are so important. Without the NFL Europe, this is the only time you get to evaluate these guys. Well, speaking of evaluation, Rachel also talked with Tyler Bray, the undrafted rookie free agent out of the University of Tennessee, and he had some interesting comments.
So, Tyler, working with three other quarterbacks who have been in this league, how is it helping you improve right here during camp?
Oh, it helps out a lot. I mean, them just giving me kind of pointers on how to not only work on the field but off the field as well.
Now, this league is all about competition, and there's a competition for the third quarterback spot right now. Where do you feel you stand?
I don't think it's a competition. I mean, we're going out there every day and battling. Everyone's working hard. We all like each other, and we're just trying to battle to win.
And today in the two-minute drill, you had some pretty good passes, that balls that weren't caught. How do you handle that?
I'll just move on to the next play. I mean, there's going to be times where they drop, and there's going to be times where I make a bad throw, so you can't get on them too much.
Making the transition from college, how are you adapting to the new tempo, the new playbook, and the new team?
Well, it's a lot different. I mean, it's a lot faster than college was, and the playbook's a lot bigger. So you just got to take it step by step and just try to move on and get better each day.
Tyler's an interesting study, not drafted, but he had the second single season yardage-wise in Tennessee history behind Peyton Manning. What about Tyler Bray in this race, skill set?
Well, skill set-wise, he can make all the throws. And, I mean, he can not have his feet set and still zing a ball wherever he needs to. And if he does get him set, he'll throw the ball all the way down the field. So this is a guy, big, strong. Occasionally has a little bit unorthodox delivery, but nothing huge. I think that was some of the talk coming out of college, but in the end, the guy can make every throw, and he's in a good situation. I think he talked about it when you're in meeting rooms with Coach Andy Reid and the knowledge you can discern from him. So he seems to have the right attitude. And the fact that you're just going out there and you're just going to do your thing, and again, you can't worry too much about everything else around you. You've just got to go try to play the best you can and see where the chips fall. And again, like you talked about it, don't go anywhere during preseason games, because there's going to be some interesting things going on, and certainly this QB battle will be one of them.
You and I are blessed for a variety of reasons. We could sit here and spend the rest of the night on that, but one of the blessings you and I both have is working with Len Dawson on the Chiefs Radio Network. The iconic quarterback of this franchise. Lenny was here today.
Yeah.
He was at practice. I'm going to ask you first, before we get his response, looking at these quarterbacks and what the best quarterback in franchise history thinks, but just get your reaction to the fact that the two of us, and you work with Lenny Dawson.
You know what? Len's been so good to me, Mitch, ever since I came here in 2000 as a player. And I can't tell you why. He was just been good to me. And, I mean, let's face it, I was a long snapper. I mean, he had to think, well, this guy throws the ball between his legs. That doesn't make any sense. But he's always been good to me. He's been good to me since I came on the broadcast. And, I mean, he is a legend. He is Kansas City. He is Chiefs. He's such a gentleman. He's such a kind person. He's a wealth of knowledge, as you know, having broadcasted with him for so long. A two-time Hall of Famer. I think there's only three that are that.
Three humans.
So he's on his game, and it was great to see him out here. And I think it's good for the QBs to see him as well because, you know, even though he played a long time ago, there are some people that you know no matter when they played, and Len Dawson is one of those.
And you and I both grew up in the kingdom, so as a little kid, watched him, and, yeah, he was a hero. And, yes, I had my 16 jersey. Now I get to stand side-by-side with him on game day. But he is a treasure, and the treasure showed up today to take a look at this quarterback position, and let's get his thoughts.
So, Lenny, what are some of your thoughts on Alex Smith?
Good-looking guy. I mean, yes, I've had the opportunity to talk to him a couple of times, and I like him. I think he's going to be really a great asset to Kansas City and to the football team. And this is another opportunity for him, something that I know something about, of not being successful the first couple of stops that I made, but then eventually got to Kansas City. And so with him, I talked to him a little while ago, and he's very happy with the training camp. He's happy with the way things are going. He's happy that he's not getting knocked down a whole lot out here before the regular games get underway, but he's going to be a good player.
Now, there's some depth at the quarterback position that we haven't had in a while. What are your thoughts on that, and what do you think it does for the team?
You never know when somebody's going to go down. All you have to do is ask Alex Smith, because what happened last year, he's going along throwing at a 70% clip, pass rating of over 100, and he gets injured, and he never sees the field again. So you're just one play away from being out of there. So depth is very important. So the other quarterbacks who are here, they have to show their stuff as well, because you never know when it might be your turn.
And as you said, you had to fight your way to the top. You had to push to get there. There's a competition going on right now with the third quarterback spot. What do you think about Tyler and Ricky?
I think I've watched out here today, and the coaching staff is getting both of them involved, which is good. You know, sometimes you go along with four quarterbacks that maybe one of them won't get much of an opportunity during the practice session when you're going against the defense. But they've got it so that they're going to make sure that each guy is going to have an opportunity. That's all you can ask for in this business, an opportunity to see how well you can do. And so they're getting that opportunity, and they're going to find out, you know, at the end of the day, who's going to be here.
And you ran into a familiar face today. What was it like catching up with Emmett?
It's a great player, great person. He and I go back a long way and been through some great times and some other times as well. But Emmett is, as I said, was a great player. He's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and he's a great person.
There are two busts in Canton, Ohio. You saw there Emmett Thomas talking to Len Dawson. That was just a special couple of seconds to see two Pro Football Hall of Famers side by side. But I'm looking forward to another year with Len Dawson.
Yeah, me as well. And to go back with that, I mean, it is touching when you see former teammates that have had so much success get together and be able to talk a little bit. That's pretty special.
One final question before we close the show tonight. We've been focusing on quarterbacks. There's another little battle here that seems somewhat subtle. But Dustin Colquitt has been the holder for this team since he came into the league. Not only one of the best punters in the league, but he has been a superb holder. I mean, he has saved a lot of plays. But Chase Daniel held, the backup quarterback here for the Chiefs, he was the holder for the New Orleans Saints the last several years. What do they do there? Do you put Chase Daniel in there or you keep Colquitt in there?
Well, you know what? It used to be that the second-string QB was always the holder, and then the fact of you realize, well, wait a minute, he has to take extra time to hold and everything. And so the punter started holding, and, you know, that's what it's morphed to for the most part in the NFL. You know, conventional wisdom says, well, if you've got the second-string QB as a holder and he does a good job, then now you can roll him out and you can do some things. And make no mistake, I'm sure that's in their minds, and that'll be a part of something in one way, shape, or form. But I think the fact that most of the time during practice, the punter and the kicker are over there and the long snapper are working together, I think you breed that familiarity. And I think Ryan has had Dustin hold for him for so many years now that I expect that Dustin will probably continue to hold. And Dustin does a great job. I broke him in the rookie year and made him catch balls all over the place. And so now he can, as long as they're right there, he can catch them. So I expect that Dustin will. But it's nice because oftentimes, as funny as it sounds, oftentimes you don't have a second string holder that's that great, and certainly not one who's held in the league every down at other teams. So it's a little thing, it's a small thing, but it's a luxury. I mean, they looked at it, they've had him do it, and this speaks to Coach Reed and him looking at every minute detail of everything that's going on with the team. That is the scientist who's understanding all the molecules and everything and how they're going to exist and be together. So that's my answer in terms of, I think it's Dustin, but you never know.
But you said something I bookmark in that response. Do you mind, Jack, with other teams if I put a quarterback out there? Because I'm out there on field goal protection. I mean, I'm sorry, on field goal defense. I'm worrying about the fake every time that Chase Daniel runs out there.
You know what? You have to be more cognizant of it. Now, Dustin would say, no, you got to be cognizant of me as well because I'm an athlete as a punter and I can throw. But
I just remember a pass against Seattle.
Exactly. Okay. So, but, yeah, I agree. Yeah, you've got to be aware of it if you've got the second-string QB out there who's holding, because now he can pick it up. And Chase is a stout kid. I mean, he can run. He's an athlete. And he can do a lot of different things. So especially if you're in that fourth and one and two, I think that would slow down a rush tremendously.
Okay, tomorrow there is no practice here in St. Joe. The mandated day off is coming for this team, and after three straight days in pads, they are ready for it. Thursday when we come back, we're going to take a little different twist, and you're going to see just some special features. You're not going to want to miss it on Thursday. So as we continue coverage here in St. Joe, we'll keep you up to speed every day the Chiefs are here. For Kendall Gammon, I'm Mitch Holtis, voice of the Chiefs. We'll see you at camp.